Good morning. My name is Bill Kladke, and I'd like to welcome you to this morning's edition of Living in Baltimore. Our guest today is Mr. Roland Wells, who's administrator and CEO of the Maryland Transit Administration, or the MTA. And Mr. Wells is here this morning to talk to us about everything MTA.
Yes.
Transportation in our area. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, for those of our listeners who are unfamiliar, and I hope there aren't many that aren't, that haven't heard of the MTA, could you please tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. The Maryland Transit Administration, which once was actually acquired the Baltimore Transit Company. So we are Maryland Transit Administration, and I highlight that fact because we also provide grant funding for all the local areas, locally operated transit systems throughout the state of Maryland. So we're responsible for the transit services throughout the entire state. We actually directly operate transit service in Central Maryland. We have about we move about almost nearly 400,000 people a day, and we have about 500 to 600 buses on the street at any given time.
Wow, that's a sizable operation.
It is. It's a big operation. We're actually the 10th largest transit agency in the nation, so we're a lot larger than the state of Maryland in comparison to the rest of the states in the nation.
Mm. What's your background?
Well, actually, I began at MTA in 1989 as a bus operator. And I kind of worked my way up to the top of the agency. I guess I never expected to be the administrator and CEO.
Horatio Alger?
Yeah. I just worked hard. I was very dedicated to our service. I actually believe in what we do. I realize that mobility is important to so many people, from young people to the elderly people. And the people just want to use it as a means to get to work.
That's right. What's that phrase of 90% of life is just showing up?
That's right.
You got to show up.
And that's what we want to help them do. And that's what we do every day. Like I said, we move quite a bit of people on buses and trains and paratransit vehicles.
Yeah. So. Well, your job as administrator CEO is to make sure it all works, right?
That's right. And it's a lot of moving parts to do. Yeah. It takes a $600 million budget to make that happen as well. The investment is, we're lucky to have the governor that we have and the secretary of transportation that we have, who are also committed to investing in transit services, and also trying to make transit a route of choice, as opposed to just a necessity for some that have no other options.
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it? Is getting it so that it is institutionalized, not
exactly.
Only institutionalized, but institutionalized in the way people think of transportation.
That's right. I mean, one of the things we'd like to do is try to begin to change the culture of this of Baltimore, the Baltimore area, the Baltimore region. One of the things we always try to remind folks is if you go to major thriving metropolis areas like in New York, Boston, Chicago, you see a robust transportation network with transit services. And that's where people tend to gravitate because of those transportation services available to them. We're just trying to get people to understand that while you can see a homeless person on a train in New York, you can also see a millionaire sitting beside them because they choose that means to get to work. And we want people to feel the same way here, just trying to overcome some of those personal stigmas that people have about different cultures in the city. So we're just trying to provide a good service so that way people can use it as a means of getting to work and to school and wherever else they want to go.
How is the transit system in Maryland developed? I mean, I know that we've all heard and we all know about how good the transit system around Washington is, and that's because the Congress has put money into it.
Right. Well, we get our funding from the Transportation Trust Fund, so we're one of five other transportation modes. Like you have Maryland Aviation Administration, Motor Vehicle Administration, the Port Administration, State Highway, and MDTA. And we also are an administration under the Secretary, the Office of the Secretary. So we get our funding from there, which the funding there comes from highway user revenues, gas taxes, tolls, titling fees, and that's how we pull our operating funding, as well as we get federal funding as well.
How's that different from some of the other transit systems in the country?
Well, many of the other transit systems may be transit authorities, so they get their monies or funding from local jurisdictions. So, for example, if they serve different counties, the counties actually have, some of them have dedicated tax funding, and they pay into the transit system to provide services in their county. We get ours from just the state as a whole.
which I guess is an advantage and a disadvantage.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we have the advantage that the Transportation Trust Fund can absorb some stresses from our budget. So in other words, I can go back, and if I need more funding for transit, the secretary can flex some of that money over to me. And you're right, the transit authorities, what you see is what you get. So then they may have to raise fares every time they have some type of budget issues, where we don't have to do that. So you're right, there are some advantages and disadvantages.
Yeah, and I guess when individual jurisdictions had their own public transit systems, they mostly had very poor ones.
That's right.
They didn't have the revenue.
That's right. That's right. One of the problems with those smaller systems over the years, as you can imagine now, they're very little to none, is because there's a lot of regulations that are required, and the cost of capital costs are so high that you would have to charge a fare so high that you couldn't possibly operate it. So, for example, Baltimore Transit Company could not survive today. They would probably have to charge about $4 a ride in order to sustain itself.
Yeah, that's going to cut down the patronage.
That would be correct. It would take the value out of a transit.
Yeah, yeah. I know that it is frustrating for folks when they see how long it does take to make changes and things.
Sure, the changes are incremental. And one of the problems that, you know, I always complain, and I can say this because all of them are probably dead, but I talk about the forefathers' poor planning for Baltimore. I mean, 40, 50, 60 years ago, we should have been thinking about a more robust rail network throughout our city. And what's happening now, fortunately, we do have some plans to put more rail service in that will allow our system to have a full system where you can connect from the light rail and the metro. That's the red line that's coming that we're planning.
Yeah. Let's talk about the red line for a second, because I know that is coming. There have been hearings on it. Public meetings on it?
That's right.
What's the status?
Well, you know, most people support the red line because they understand the necessity of having that other mode to help connect all the modes that we have. Mm-hmm. It actually is expected to go into preliminary engineering this year, which means we move into a phase of where we can actually do true construction planning and engineering and architectural work. We have station area planning committees that are working, so different neighborhoods are helping to create and plan their stations. So we're ready to move on. We are hopeful that we could be actually breaking ground in a couple of years and actually opening by 2019-2020. So we're hopeful to keep moving on with the project.
Great. Yeah. It takes so much to get that done.
It does. It takes years. And that's why I talked about the forefathers planning. You know, you have to plan it many, many years out.
Yeah. Of course, that's not as true about buses, but at the same time,
that's right.
There is that's a plus and a minus, too.
Yes, buses are more flexible. We can add more buses when we need to. We do have what we call a bus service allocation task force right now within our agency. And basically what they're doing is looking at all the data that we have to determine and ensure that we have enough available resources where they should be so that we're meeting customer demands. Over the last few years, we've started buying lower floor buses, which carry less seated, has a lower seating capacity. So over the years, we've reduced our seating capacity. We may need to increase the amount of buses on the street. And so what we're doing now is buying articulated buses, which carry more passengers per bus. So we're able to put those in to help offset the shortage that we've had over the years through the low floor buses.
How's the MTA doing? And we're in a period of budgetary cutbacks and tightness among various things in our public wheel. How's the MTA doing?
We're doing pretty good. I mean, we are poised to fall in line with our budget this year. We don't expect to go over budget. Mm-hmm. And last year, we actually were able to revert $1 million back to the Transportation Trust Fund, so we operated under budget. One of our priorities is to be as efficient as possible. And what we've done was we used the governor's state stat process to help us become more efficient, and we converted it to an op stat and an MTA stat, where we actually drill down on all of our efficiencies to make sure that we're as efficient as possible.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
We've done well.
The reaction of the public is always the reaction of the public, and folks have a way of reacting to things, whether it's Boston or D.C. or Baltimore, in a way that centers on the problem.
Right.
Sometimes doesn't have a perspective.
Right.
What do you hear from folks nowadays?
Well, I mean, people definitely like the service. They want more service. Mm-hmm. They want more mm-hmm. frequent service. So we're looking at that. Obviously, you need to have a demand because it's a big investment whenever you put more service in. Yeah. So we want more people to demand the service. And that, I mean, that's a good problem to have, you know, more demand. So we're working on that. But certainly, we always remind people that we are one of the safest transit agencies in the nation. We want to stay safe. We do
Let's
our
say
jobs.
That. Let's say yeah. that again.
Yes, we're one of the safest transit agencies in the nation, and we're going to stay safe. You know, that's our goal.
Wonderful. How do you ascribe that?
Well, I mean, one of the ways that we make sure that we have the best trained people. Our mm-hmm. operators are trained thoroughly to be professionals and experts at their craft. I would say that because I was also an operator, and I can tell you that the training is very rigorous, and we want to make sure that we have nothing but the best operating our equipment. Another thing is to constantly review our training programs to make sure that the training programs are meeting today's mm-hmm. standards. And we also look and work with other transit agencies for peer reviews to find out best practices. So we look at those best practices and we implement them or tweak them to fit our state and our transit agency.
Well, it's wonderful that financially you're doing well enough to be able to implement some of those best practices.
Absolutely. You have to look within, find inefficiencies. There are always some, you know. I think we've kind of squeezed all the blood from the rock now, but we're about close to not having any more. But certainly uh-huh. we have looked in and we found some inefficiencies and gotten more efficient. So we're able to continue to go some
That's
of these
great.
Good things.
That's great. Let's talk about mobility. That is always a at least in the 15, 20 years or so challenge. That I've been around here, mobility has always been a contentious issue.
Sure. It's very challenging. I mean, we do between 4,000 and 5,000 trips a day on paratransit services. Ooh. And it's basically a door-to-door service. So,
yeah.
And you can imagine how difficult that is to manage.
There'd be very few taxi services outside of New York City that would do that.
Exactly. Right? And so it's difficult because you have a lot of people that have special needs and you have to make sure all your lifts are working. But we have about 400 mobility vehicles moving around the streets every day. And again, we do between 4,000 and 5,000 trips. And we strive for a high on-time performance. We try to stay above 90% mm-hmm. on-time performance on our paratransit service.
And if you could give some contact information for folks about mobility and about
sure.
about some of the rules about that, that'd be helpful.
Okay, certainly. They can always go to our website at mm-hmm. mta.maryland.gov. Mm-hmm. mta.maryland, the whole word has to be spelled out, .gov. Or they can call 410-539-5000 to talk to one of our customer service agents.
Okay, so that's www.mta.maryland.gov. I guess
that's
I don't
correct.
Have to put the www there. Right. Or 410-539-5000.
Right.
Okay, let's see. We've got about a minute and a half left. Could you give us some more information, please, about other contemplated changes that
oh,
folks
absolutely.
Might be looking for?
I'm glad you let me get that in before
sure.
it's over.
My goodness.
We have a number of new a number of priorities that we have and a number of new things we want to introduce to the public to improve their service that they receive. One of the things that's really important to me is that we get customer care agents, not only information agents, mm-hmm. but anytime you have a problem, someone specifically will walk you through that problem and make sure your problem is resolved. So we're bringing on a department that's called customer care. So when you send an email, it goes to a specific person, and then that person will call you back and work through that service.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we're doing next vehicle arrival signage. So that way when you transfer from a rail system to a bus, you'll know when your bus is due to arrive. As a matter of fact, the first next vehicle arrival signage to go in place is at Mondawmin Hub. We just did a major renovation there, mm-hmm. and that's some of the technology we put in. So you can see.
Well, that sounds great.
That's great. And
yeah.
when you come off the train, you know exactly what time your bus is due to arrive. And so we're excited about that. And a little bit down the road, we're looking at real-time passenger information where you can actually look at your phone and see where your bus is relative to where you're standing.
Mm.
So that's another good benefit that we're going to be bringing to our riders.
So using the technology.
Technology is going to be very helpful to us and to our riders, and we want to give it to them.
Boy, that's great. That's great. As someone who, when I lived in Boston, I got rid of my car. Didn't need my car because I would take public transportation
that's
everywhere.
Right.
And that connection between train and bus and
very
bus
important.
Is critical.
Yes, it is.
It drives folks crazy.
That's
crazy.
Right.
Crazy. I guess if there's anything we don't want to have in this life. It's anxiety, right?
That's right. That's right. More information you give them, you cut it down. That's right.
Sounds like you folks are doing everything you can toward it.
We certainly are, and I thank you so much for having us.
That's wonderful. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank our guest, Mr. Roland Wells, who's administrator and CEO of the Maryland Transit Administration, for being our guest today.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Keep up your good work for all of us.
Thank you. We're trying.
I know you are.
All right.
For Living in Baltimore, I want to thank you for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods, and we'll see you next time.